Hey, Hustlers, this is Bob Ruff of NBI Studios. Before you start today's episode, I just wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up. Last week, Mike and I were out of the office, and Stacy and Angie were left all on their own, and they did experience some technical difficulties. So I just wanted to give you that heads up that when you listen to today's episode, the sound quality is not what you're used to. The episode is great, the conversations are amazing. So please bear with us this week and know that Mike Bussing did his best to make this episode sound great, and I think you're really going to enjoy the listen. Keep on hustling, ladies.
This is a tool that's being utilized by lots of people now as a way to save their memory. So we invite our listeners to check it out as well. And welcome back to Hustlin' Heels Podcast. I am your host, Stacy.
And I'm your co-host, Angie.
Oh, Angie, getting good at that.
I know, right?
It's like you've done it a couple of times. We are back in the studio. It's Thursday night. We have a couple of guests with us tonight. But before we introduce our guests, we are staring intently at our bottles of wine because, you know, Angie likes sweet wine. I like not so sweet wine. So now there are always two bottles of wine in the studio. It wouldn't be a podcast without a Lazy Ballerina Winery wine. So I am a proud member of the wine club of the Lazy Ballerina Winery. Out of all the clubs I've been a part of in my entire whole life, and there have been many, this is my most favorite club to ever be a part of. So I have I'm enjoying the Cherry Kissed Red from Lazy Ballerina Winery as a package of my wine club. And Angie and I were at Lazy Ballerina Winery just this past weekend, weren't we, Angie?
We were. It was a lot of fun.
It was fun. We recorded a marketing video for the Lake Michigan Shore Wine Trail, and we got to try the wine, talk about the wine, and have a good old time.
I was so excited to discover they had a tasting room right there in
Bridgman.
Bridgman.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they have a tasting room in Bridgman, one in downtown St. Joseph as well. And we love Mel and Lauren from Lazy Ballerina Winery. So if you're looking for a recommendation this weekend and you want something red, you should definitely try their Cherry Kissed Red. It is a tart cherry, and it's pretty fantastic.
And even as a sweet wine lover, I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Also, on Sundays in December, if you are in the area, they have half off glasses of wine. So you should definitely stop and check them out.
Yep. Two places to check them out, and always one of our favorites. So what are you drinking, Ange?
So I'm drinking this Leelanau. It's from Leelanau Cellars, which is up north of it.
Yep. Leelanau Peninsula.
Yep. It's a winter white peach chill. And quite honestly, I know it says winter white, but reminds me of summer, which really makes me happy right now.
It's peach.
Because it's peach, yes. Uh-huh. And it's sweet and it's delicious. But it reminds me of summer, which warms my heart a little bit because obviously I'm not super warm.
Yeah, but it's real cold out. So
it's chilly.
Well, it's been a good week, and we have some fun stuff to talk about this week too. But in the studio with us tonight, you've heard me mention him before a few times. He is from the area. I've known him my entire life, and actually both the people in the studio tonight I've known my entire life. So I would like to welcome you all, listeners, to an evening in the studio with my dad, Mr. Paul Zotz. Are you going to say hi, Dad?
Well, hello, everyone.
And my dad brought my baby brother along. So, hi, baby Brenny.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm going to have you take those microphones and move them a little bit closer to your faces. Oh, yeah, right there. There you go. You're going to talk right into them. So, Brendan's name is Brendan, but he has never really gone by Brendan in our family. It sounds very formal. So, we've always called him Brenny Boy. The kids call him Brenny Boo. And
or B.
Or B.
Just B.
And so he is in the studio with us tonight as well. So welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we are we're here tonight with my dad and my brother because we wanted to talk about a project that they have launched here within the last month. And this project is a way for folks out there to collect memories. And we're going to get into that. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about their background and who they are so you guys have a good idea of why they're here with us tonight. So, Dad, we'll start with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been here my whole life, I guess, too, in the Buchanan area. Came to that area in second grade, I think. Lived up in the St. Joe area prior to that. And then probably in my sophomore year and junior year, I moved to Alaska for a little while and went to school up there for a little while. Then came back home and graduated from Buchanan. Went back a few years later to Alaska for a little period of time and worked on a fishing boat, and then came back home and decided that the hardwoods of southwestern Michigan is where this kid's going to be, and nothing better than the hardwoods of southwestern Michigan. So,
let's go back a little bit. So you grew up here in southwestern Michigan, had a big family. So talk a little bit about growing up in this area, not only your family, but the friends who have become like family.
Yep. As I say, I grew up in out on the northwest side of Buchanan, out in the country. We had a pond below the hill and a stream out back in the woods, and went to a little school called Indian Hill School.
Country kids school.
It was a country kids school. It was one of the last country kids school around. So I got to meet lots of country kids there. A lot of these kids ended up being my best friends and continue to be my best friends even to this day. So that's kind of how I got to grow up, working on the farms and hunting in the fields. And that's it.
Causing trouble at the school.
Well, trying not to.
We're not talking about those stories here. We're not around a fire. Okay, that's fine. We can go in a different direction. But growing up out in what was one of the first jobs that you ever remember doing?
I remember as a kid, when we were probably 11, 12 years old or so, we had a neighbor that would take us as well as their kids, and we would go and pick berries all through the day. So they drop us off in the morning before they went to work. They're on their way to work, and we would work all day in the fields, either blueberries or strawberries or whatever, and they'd pick us up in the afternoon. And then went from there to baling hay for the farmers and that type of thing.
So starting to work early, did your brother's sister join in on that as well?
My little brother Dave, he's a little bit younger than me. He kind of followed in what I did. The other kids were a little bit younger, so they were more around the house. But it was mainly me and my brother Dave who did a lot.
And you guys drove your car there, or how'd you get there?
As far as...
I mean, really back then, I remember you guys talking a lot about just riding your bikes everywhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I would have neighbors that we would go do a lot of this stuff, too, and we would get up early and ride our bikes wherever we were going to work on the farms. Yeah.
Do you think that those early years and those early experiences contributed to your work ethic today?
I think so. I mean, I guess I don't know. But, I mean, I think all the kids that I grew up with had the same work. I mean, it's just where you either did it or else you didn't, you didn't get to go do things, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody, I just think it was natural for at least all the kids that I kind of grew up around. The guys that are continuing to be my friends, that's just nature of the beast,
Talk about the role that hunting played in your life, even from an early age.
I don't know. I guess that it was part of my family, from my grandpa, my dad, my uncle, cousins, that type of thing, which is part of us. And I know that as a kid, it was the thing that I wanted to do. It was just where I felt most comfortable was out in the woods or out fishing or just in the woods with family and friends and that type of thing. So hunting was term religious experience is correct, but I mean, it's kind of like it's spiritual for many of us that do that and are part of that and continues to be. Mm-hmm.
So you go to Alaska. Talk a little bit about your Alaskan experience. Why did you go there? What was it like there the first time when you were in high school?
Yep. When I was in high school, that was back in the late 70s. The economy was kind of tough. My dad had lost a job that he had had for years and years and years. We were living on a farm, wanted to try to keep it. He needed to work, and there was opportunity in Alaska. And I had an uncle that was living up there, working as a fisherman and a welder and that type of thing. So that was the opportunity to go there. There was work there. My dad took off and went in early January or something, and he took off. And then shortly later, maybe it's a little bit later than that, but in any case, he was there a number of months, and then me and my brother Dave, the next youngest, flew up there to be with him and stay with him. Rest of the kids stayed home. We all kind of worked and made as much money as we could to send back home to the family and try to hold the farm. I was 15 or so, my brother was 13, but yeah, that's what we did. We moved up to be with him. So we could kind of help just be around, I guess, help with him.
Yeah. And so grandma was back here with two younger brothers and a sister.
One younger brother and a sister. Yeah, and one that had just been born, little Dan had just been born. In fact, he was born the 3 days before I left.
And then, so what was life like up in Alaska if you're a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old?
Well, I mean, for us, when we first arrived there, we were very, very poor, and so we just didn't have money. And so, luckily, during that time up there, there was some housing that was growing. There was we were in Juneau, but we lived out on what's called Douglas Island. Douglas Island had some subsidized housing. Mainly, it was the Tlingit Indians that lived there. So everyone called it the Tlingit Indian, but we were Tlingit Indian camp. But we were the white kids that lived in the Tlingit. And we didn't have, it was a nice newer apartment, but there was no furniture. They didn't have carpeting. It was just hard tile floors, no furniture. And we didn't have electricity running water at the time. So anyway, we went to the local Goodwill and got some thin pads to sleep on and just kind of started out there. We had some clothes and we just started working out from there.
And Grandpa worked for the travel.
He originally worked, got there. He got a job working for the state of Alaska, and that's in Juneau. A lot of jobs were state of Alaska, and he got a job as a clerk typist, which is a starting position. They understood his editorial ability to do editorial type of stuff, and so they put him on a project that dealt with every Alaskan gets some money every year from the oil things. And so, and so he was dealing with that and the taxes that went along with that. Yeah. So it was some technical stuff. So he did a little bit of traveling around the state.
All right, so you guys were there for a while. Then you came back to our beloved hometown of Buchanan, Michigan.
Yep.
In 1978, you came back?
I think so,
Went to a Future Farmers of America class. There's a cute girl there.
Yep.
What happened?
Well, so we came back. By the time I got back, I was really... the Alaska experience was, from a school standpoint, was totally different than what it was when I left. Because of its freedom, and it was just a whole different world. So when I came back to Buchanan High School, not that I loved the school, believe me, but I was not ready to be a student at that point. So yeah, things were a little bit tough there. So I took all the easiest classes I could just to try to get through because I wanted to play football. At least that final year. And in that class, I had a buddy that said, hey, let's get into it. And I was a lot of farm kids out there. I really wasn't a farmer. I helped out on all the farms, but we didn't farm. A working farm. And so I took that class, and in that class was a little girl that was on Tom's spot that I met, and we're still, I'll be going home to her tonight here, 40 years later.
Oh, man, that's right. She's pretty cute.
Well, she's cute.
Yeah,
she was very cute and sweet, and her family was sweet, and so it was an awesome time of life, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then you guys graduated, and about a year later, got married. Yep. About a year after that.
Had this little bratty kid named Stacy.
And talk about what life was like growing up. I mean, raising a family in a small town. I mean, you guys were high school sweethearts, get married right out of high school. And what was that like? What do you remember from those years?
Well, I was real lucky in that I had a lot of friends that helped me kind of, again, I worked at a store named Thompson's. Mm-hmm. We call it Beck's now, but I went to school with Eric Thompson and was friends with the Thompson family. And so I was just a bag boy. And so I figured I could take on the world. I'd been through this. Coming from the Alaska experience of really not having anything and being a bag boy and being able to make $170 a week, was I was living high in the hog. So I figured I could take on anything. And so getting married and having kids, I thought I could do that. I mean, it's no big deal. But in any case, that really wasn't the end all in jobs. But I had a buddy that let me know there was an opening with a company called Food Specialties in Buchanan. And I hired him as a second driver there. We worked there for 17 years, I think.
Yeah. By the end of it, you were the general manager there.
During that time, it was great. It was I really loved the sports of school. I mean, I didn't love school so much the last few years, but I love the camaraderie and seeing my buddies there. And I love football and I love sports and I love hockey and floor hockey program and that type of thing. So when I got out of any chance I had, that's what I wanted to do, was be playing sports or taking my kids and playing sports. So I coached teams and that type of thing. And I would bring all of you and the rest of the kids to those programs, just to be around that type of thing.
Some of my earliest memories are of the Buchanan Rocket football team. You know, when you coached Dan, who was your baby brother, who was only 4 years older than me, my uncle. And back then, you would coach their football team, and then you'd take all the boys home from practice. And they'd jump in the back of your truck, and you'd drive around town and drop all of them off, which would never fly today.
Right.
But those are some of my earliest memories, riding in the back of the truck with some stinky boys wearing their helmet, their shoulder pads, and singing songs and doing that. And that was kind of life growing up back then, There was always people around. There were always uncles. I had a billion uncles, I think. Uncles and aunts around and people coming out. Talk a little bit about where we lived and kind of what that was like.
Well, originally, my folks lived out on a 20-acre farm outside north of Buchanan. But then when I got married, we originally lived in an apartment, and then a stroke of luck and a tragic event kind of helped propel me a little bit. We wanted to live out in the country, and we had had a home there back when I was a kid, and our house burnt down back when I was in fifth grade, so we lost that. But there was still a pad there for a trailer, and it was a trailer, and it burnt down. And about the time you were probably 8 or 9 or something, I can't even remember, but we had an uncle and an aunt, and the aunt's sister, who we didn't know, but she was killed tragically in an explosion, and they were able to, there was some money that came their way for that, so they were able to buy a real nice farm, and they sold us their trailer for, I can't remember, back then I think it was $5,000 or $6,000 or something like that, but for me, that was, to be able to move that thing out into the country and be out, being able to mow the big lawn where we used to play ball and all the kids would play ball, and having the pond below the hill and being up in the woods and that type of thing, it was a stroke of luck for us, and so they let us make payments, and as young kids, we were able to do that.
My greatest memories from growing up were living in a trailer out in the woods, and little kitties would come and pop their heads up through the register.
Lots of memory building going on over there, guys.
So I mean, that was, and the reason why I'm talking about all this is it's going to make a little bit more sense later as we talk about your big project, but also, the listeners are familiar with you. They know kind of some of our stories. And so I think it's important for them to kind of put that whole picture together and see what life was like kind of growing up. And after that, we moved into town, moved into the suburbs, moving on up, like the Jeffersons. Lived in the suburbs, took the country boy out and put him in a neighborhood so his girls could run around with bunches of kids that were in that area. And that was a good life, too. So lots of friends in that area. And then I went away to college. When I was 19, I got a call. I'll never forget. But I was in college, and I got a call. And it was my mom on the phone, and she said, "Hi, honey." I said, "Hi, Mom." And she said, "I'm pregnant. Are you mad?" All in one thing. No time to pause. "I'm pregnant. Are you mad?"
If it she makes you her. Feel better, I didn't know about my brother until he was 3 years old. True story. He's my half-brother, but my dad didn't want to tell me because he was afraid.
Oh, see?
Not to parlay our conversation, yeah, but
see, so maybe
similar.
We got some memories. So that was little Brady boy who's here in the studio. So, Dad, talk a little bit about that because you kicked one kid out of the house and then you brought another one.
That was it. I mean, we had babies obviously at a very young age, and that was really kind of my life. And we had kids in sports. You were in sports all the way through, and followed you, you know, on the little trek that we did with the Beauty Queen stuff that you went through, and you know, Karen in sports, and so you had moved on to college. Karen was in high school, tearing it up in sports, and we could see the end was happening here pretty fast, and it was like, man, that happened so fast. And so me and the mama said, "Hey, what do we see about maybe one more time? See if we can." And so we did, and comes Brenny. It was a winter, well, November 18th. It was the third day of gun season, and Bear was up in a, had her up in a stand out behind the house. And
Bear is my sister. Yep. So her name is Karen, but growing up, the Care Bears were pretty popular. So we started calling her Care Bear, and that morphed into Bear. So we never call her Karen. Right. But for listeners, if you hear us talk about Bear, that's our Bear. She's the girl.
That's the Bear. By that time, we had moved out onto lots of long stories, but we had moved out onto a 1,000-acre piece of property out on the St. Joe River, and I was running a club out that way, and we were living in an old farmhouse out that way, so we could hunt right out behind the house. We'd moved from the suburbs out to the back out to the country where we needed to be, and we were there was a morning hunt, and Mama was at the house, and I was getting ready to go out. Karen had already gone out, and she said, "It's time to go." So we yelled at the Bear, and the Bear came running in from the house and running in from the woods, and off we went to the hospital, and Brady Boy was here.
Mm-hmm. And now he's here now. Now he's 18 mm-hmm. years old. 18 years ago, I can't even believe it's been that long. So, Brady, let's talk about, because you had a little bit of a different childhood than I did. I mean, you know, I grew up out in the woods with all the uncles around. We played wiffle ball all the time. We had little kitties popping up through the registers and all kinds of cool stuff like that. We played space pig on the propane tank. All the fun times, down on the hill with all the ice hockey, and every week another uncle would come up with one part of their body either broken or bloody. So, you know, that's back before they all played with helmets. So then Brittany comes into the world, and a little bit of a different story. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
Can you tell the listeners what space pig on the propane tank means?
You guys don't play space pig on propane tank? Let me reiterate. We grew up in the country before Wi-Fi, and we had to make up a lot of games. So we had a propane tank. And if you have a propane tank, you know, if you look at it, it looks an awful lot like a pig. And so one of our favorite games, and my uncle Dan was only 4 years older than me, so he was like my brother, and he would have his friends over, and our favorite game was to sit on top of the propane tank and pretend it was a pig, but it wasn't just a pig, it was a space pig. And we would travel throughout the galaxy on space pig, and sometimes we'd fall off, then we'd have to get back on. That was just one of the games. The other games, we always have swords, and we'd go out into the woods, and we'd do, you know, medieval fights. And when Uncle John was around, he's the second youngest, we'd play leader of the pack on our bicycles. So we'd pretend they were motorcycles, and we'd do loops around out on the old country road. So that was growing up back then. Like, it was all outside. It was all imagination games, and
I never had the opportunity to play Space Pig on the propane tank. I feel like we need to recreate this stuff.
You guys were missing out. I thought everybody grew up playing Space Pig.
I 100% missed out. I'm not going to lie. Sorry. I just, like, she mentioned it, and yeah. I really needed
yeah.
to know.
Yeah, so, the other game, talk about the other game, actually, before we get, one of my other favorite games, Dad, talk about the frozen 2-liter bottle on the ice.
Well, yeah, we had a pond below the hill, and the pond was a central focus for the countryside and all the kids in the countryside around us, within a couple miles around us. We would, luckily for us, there was a farmer who had a barn to the north end of that pond, and they had a floodlight up, way up by the barn, but it would shine some light down onto the pond when it was frozen, and we would go down there, we would set goals that, I don't know, 80 yards apart or something.
At nighttime.
At nighttime. You really couldn't see anything. All you could, and we would be on skates, and you really, so you would put stuff in a 2-liter bottle, rocks or something in a 2-liter bottle. We used glass bottles at that time, really. But you could hear the idea is you throw it, and you'd hear it bouncing along the ice, and you had to block it before it got through your goal. And you could, you're just using your, hearing, but then you couldn't see each other very well. So anyway. It was a hell of a lot of fun. But yeah, that's one of the fun things we did down on the pond.
Yeah. So then Brenny Boy comes along. So Brenny, you're introduced to the story, a little brother. So tell me how that might have been different growing up, based on you've heard all the stories mm-hmm. sitting around the campfire.
Yeah, so I started on the 1,000 acre.
yeah.
And I had a 4-wheeler, so I guess I think you have to look at a propane tank for a long time to see a pig. So I didn't have to look at a propane tank. I got to ride my quad out in the
spoiled kid.
The country. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh. You got to. Yeah, some of my earliest memories are of Brenny. He had a little BB gun, and he had these little froggy boots, mm-hmm. and he would be wearing his diaper, and he'd think he'd see a squirrel out in the yard, so he'd grab his little BB gun. Just wearing his diaper, he'd throw on his little froggy boots, and he'd run out behind a tree, and you could see him out there trying to shoot squirrels with his little BB gun. So talk a little bit about what it was like growing up out there.
A lot of outdoor stuff still. Mm-hmm. So, like I mentioned, my quad, there were so many trails out there I could ride around on. I remember cutting wood with Dad, and we had huge wood piles in the back, and we had goats and chickens and stuff we took care of. And I remember going out before the school bus got there every morning and shooting squirrels, like you said, in my underwear before I got ready.
I mean, we lived, I think our closest neighbor was probably, I don't know, a mile away or something,
yeah.
And we were on
and it was Grandpa.
Yeah, and it was Grandpa. Yeah, again, I guess I'm just to go back during Stacy and Bear's time, I think growing up, we didn't have as much, extra funds around. By about the time Brenny came along, we were doing a little bit better financially, I think. And so, yeah, he had a different life, I think, mm-hmm. than the two girls. The girls grew up kind of not as many of those type of amenities. But yeah, Brenny, when he was 5 or 6 or something, we bought him a small quad, and he was adult at that time, kind of even as a little kid. And so he would go. I mean, we had literally 2 miles of trail, I mean, more than that, I mean, tons of miles of trails, and he learned how to ride that quad on those trails, so he would be all over that 1,000 acres. He knew it better than a lot of the men out there.
That's true. So what else do you remember?
Hockey, for sure. So it was named after Brendan Shanahan, which is pretty cool. So
Red Wings player,
yeah. So a lot of my youth was spent going to practice and playing hockey, and made the Irish Rovers, which was cool. So
which is the elite team for Notre Dame area.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We beat Chicago in the championship that year. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Our house league won championship twice, so that was fun. And then floor hockey for sure, too, at Buchanan. So lots of hockey, lots of hunting. And then all those games with the uncles, not Space Pig, but all the upgraded games, the new games that came out.
I'm curious, though, like, what was it like growing up with a couple of older sisters? I mean,
Well, Stacy was, I remember I was always so excited when Stacy would come home because I'd never see her. She was always I don't even know where your condo was to this day, but you
had. Yeah, I was in college, and you know, when he was born, and then I lived in D.C. for a while, and then I lived, you know, on the west side of the state. So I never lived home really at the same time as Brenny, short of maybe a couple of months. Mm-hmm. So whenever, and it was always heartbreaking to me because when I'd go home, I'd spend all my time with Brenny, and then when I would have to leave, I would cry the whole way back to my house, and I would, and I remember thinking. I came back in 2008, eventually back to the Buchanan area, but I was gone for 10 years from my hometown. And one of the driving factors was to get back to Brenny. Like I just needed to be around him. You know, he was just, and still is, you know, one of the guys of my life, you know, one of my best buds. So I always remember like just being devastated to leave him because he was such a cute little thing with his little froggy boots and a little diaper butt. But so yeah, I mean, it was kind of special, you know, when I got to hang out with him. So, and he was around Bear a little bit more. So, and they did a lot of hunting together.
Yeah, there's lots of hunting memories with Bear.
Hunting is obviously a central theme that runs through our family, that runs through our lives. And that's kind of what got you into this idea, right? So, let's talk about we talked about this with my listeners too, but you've always been an entrepreneur. I remember learning that phrase when I was very young about an entrepreneur means you start your own business, you're your own boss. You've always been that. You've always worked for someone, you know, you've had a job, but if we talk about hustling and heels, where did I get my hustle from? From my dad. He's always had a side hustle. Like there's always been some business idea, something. So I guess, where did that come from? Where did the whole like side, like you always have, I think you and I share the thing where it's like, we have 50 ideas before we take, before we have our first cup of coffee in the morning. Or they wake us up in the middle of the night and we get up and we write all those down. So is that always been something in your life?
Yeah, I think so. I think I remember, again, we're talking about memories here, but I remember as a kid, I think I was 11 years old and I was going to turn 12, which at that point, I was carrying a gun prior to that, but it was my dad's gun, out hunting. But legally, I was going to be able to get to go hunting. Folks didn't have a lot of money. And so if I was going to get my gun, I was going to have to work for my gun. You know what I mean? Nobody expected any different. And so I would work picking berries and that type of thing. But my grandpa had a small strawberry farm. And he said that he would give me 1,000 strawberry plants if I would plant them. And my next thought was, okay, I am going to plant those, and I'm going to take care of them, and then I'm going to sell the strawberries, and then I'm also going to go have the biggest garden you ever had. And my dad gave me a section of ground to have a garden, and I was going to grow vegetables and sell them. But the big thing is I was going to win ribbons at the Barron County Youth Fair, and they'd give me 75 cents for that, and so that, and I had it all figured out how much I needed to do to be able to buy a gun. So that's really kind of what started the plan. I had to find a way to make money. And so that's what it was. Mm-hmm.
And you continued to do that throughout your life. I mean, there was always an idea going, you know.
Well, I mean, the hunt club was, obviously a big one that was really turned the tide for us, I think, financially and in a lot of ways.
When you talk about Hunt Club, what was that?
But back in my 30s, I came up, I grew up out in the country, so I had lots of opportunity, and I worked for lots of farmers, that type of thing. During that time, things were really starting to change around here. A lot of folks from Chicago had moved in. A lot of them didn't like hunting and understand they're from the city. They want to leave the hell alone, I understand. But it was really cutting down on the plate. You know, I used to be able to just take off as a kid and go, miles and miles and hunt on farmers' properties. And so anyway, I had your mama's little brothers, Uncle Randy and Kenny, that were growing up and wanted to go hunting, but I couldn't, part of the deal is you get permission from a farmer. You don't want to over, so you really couldn't go to these guys. And so, and add more people and more people. So I came up with the idea that I could find some land and help a farmer pay his taxes by giving him some money. I would lease the land from him, and I would sublease it, or then lease it again to hunters that didn't have ground. And so I came up with that idea and studied it. And lo and behold, shortly after I'd done that, an ad came up in the paper that the local leader, their highlights back then, you'll never see again and never seen since. And it said 916 acres for lease in Berrien County. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Anyway, long story behind that. But anyway, I ended up getting won the bid, in effect, on that. That's a long story.
I love the bid story.
Well, the story was that I had this old beater Toyota piece of crap truck. So I showed up. They said where to show up. I showed up at the end of this old dirt road. And as I pull in, I see cars from Chicago and these big fancy trucks and I'm this country guy that pulls down the road, and I just about turned around and I was by myself and all these guys were in groups, and then I said, you know what, fuck them. Especially because there were some Chicago vehicles there. I thought, I'm going to try to win this for the local guys. And so anyway, I went in, and just luckily enough, the guy that was running the tours was the forester there that was planting for this old guy out of California that owned it. And I asked him if I could jump in the truck with him. And because he had a bunch of crap in the front of his truck, he said, yeah, push it over and let me. I was by myself, so it wasn't like other guys could go. And he told the rest of the guys to go jump in the back, and he'd give them a tour around in the back. Well, I was able to just talk with him and glean all kinds of information. And when we came back, there was enough guys that wanted a second tour. I said, can I go again? Anyway, because I didn't want anybody else getting up front. And so we went around again, and I had learned enough about it, about the guy that was looking, what the guy was looking for that owned that property. I came up with a plan and a bid, and I'll be damned, about 3 weeks later, I get a call from California, and the guy says, you certainly weren't the best bid, but I loved your idea. And so anyway, that started. I had a three-year contract to do that, and when he told me I had it, then the scariness began because I got it. Now I got to make it work, and so we did. And with the help of your mom, we put together things, and I got a bunch of guys out there, and they did it. And then probably 3 years later, when it was going to go go back up for bid, I came up with another plan because I had heard through the grapevine that there were some business guys that were going to try to really run the bid up. And I came up with another plan. That was this old beater house out on the lake. And the guy that owned it, the guy from California that owned it, said, hey, I want you to have the fire department come in and burn that down. And I said, hey, I got a different plan. What if I move into that house and I just run the hunt club for you, and I get that house for the rest of my life for free, and a few acres around that. Or not for free, but for running the hunt club.
And become the caretaker of the farm.
And become the caretaker of that 1,000 acres. It happened. And so, not that we need to go through it. It didn't last forever. Yeah. It lasted for about 9-10 years, and things changed. But in any case, it was a
launch pad.
Yeah, it was a launch pad.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. It was a great fortune. Yep. You know, that twist of fate that allowed you to then launch into what you do today. Yep. So the whole idea of hunting running through the family. And the idea that we kind of grew up around campfires and grew up around deer camp, and your consistent drive to think of new ideas and come up with new business plans and come up with side hustles, I guess, if you want to say, has led you to your idea today. So
it was a little bit different in that it really came from it came around hunting, but it came from a need and a desire to go back, I guess, to catch up.
So let's go back to Grandpa.
Yep.
Right? Okay. Yep. So your dad, my grandpa, who was one of my best friends, I was the oldest granddaughter, and so I spent a lot of time with him. And growing up, we just had a lot in common. He was a writer. I eventually became a writer. He loved to read and stories and talk around the campfire, and I loved to listen to him. He would take me on all kinds of adventures. If he found out I was interested in something, he'd find something that was in the area that related to that, and we'd go on an adventure. I'll never forget, in fifth grade, I learned the word anthropology, and then I learned that it was the longest word I could spell. And so I decided I want to be an anthropologist. Well, any grandpa is probably going to, a normal grandpa would be like, oh, that's cute, honey. And he said, you're going to be an anthropologist? I found an archaeological dig. We're going to go. So we go to this archaeological dig, and I'll never forget, because I had been really talking it up. Like, I want to be an anthropologist. And we go there, and it's this hole in the ground. And I go, This is it. Fuck that. That seems boring. But it was the whole idea of like everything was a big thing for him. So even the little things were like, yeah, let's do that. I mean, it was all this excitement. He was a jumper. He was the jumper. He had a hobby farm. He was a newspaper writer. He had a column when he retired called The Dotson Farm, where he would talk about, raising, all kinds of animals and, growing all kinds of vegetables and doing stuff the old fashioned way. But talk a little bit about your dad.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, part of the thing was that, I mean, again, going back to hunting, mm-hmm. we had lots of people around that love that type of thing. But one of the things that we would do every year, me and a buddy, Chuck Letcher, bought a 40-acre piece of property up in the Upper Peninsula, and we would go up there, hunting for a week to shoot bear or to shoot deer, shoot grouse or that type of thing. The guys that went up there became, your very, very best friend. They were your best friends before you went, but I mean, obviously that just made it tougher and just stronger, a relationship when you're with guys for a whole week and spending that type of time. And we did it, lots and lots of times on fishing trips up there, that type of thing. Grandpa, he liked hunting, but what he liked more was being in camp. And when the guys would come back in and talking stories until 3 a.m, just talking old stories or talking about it, and just loved sitting around the fire. And then we had another fella named Jack Hall, who was a father of one of Daniel, my little brother, kid brother's dad, his friend's dad. And he started going up with us. He was just a fantastic guy. We had done some football coaching together. Anyway, fantastic guy. Both of them were older than us, though. And so one of the things that they loved to do, and a memory that just really, really stuck with me, was that they loved being around the fire and out there on the fire. And so a lot of the younger guys, we'd stay out till after dark. You'd be walking in. And some of my fondest memories are looking down our long road. And then there's a long driveway that goes back into the camp. And seeing the fire going and listening to them guys talking. And they always, have the fire going, have coffee going, have the chili going when you get back. They could give two shits about, if they got a deer out, they were just happy to be back in camp. And so those guys kind of were our fire keepers. They were our kind of original fire keepers. So that's that. And I guess, going back to the impetus of this project that we're working on is that last year, opening day of gun season for folks around here that know it, not this past season, but the year before that, a year ago, opening day, we had a kind of a rainstorm, and it was kind of depressing to have a rainstorm on opening day. It's like Christmas. But in any case, as usual, I would go out an hour before light. I would go out and sit out in the woods. And in this case, because it was raining, I decided I was going to go to one of our stands that had a tent. So I was out there about an hour before light, and as I was sitting there, it just brought back memories that all across Michigan, in my head, I was thinking all across Michigan, people are getting up, walking out, let's go, light's coming up in the swamp and that type of thing. And so, and just remembering those things. And so anyway, I got remembering and thinking about that, and then thinking about my dad that had passed, thinking about Jack that had passed, and how just kind of how sad it was, and that there were lots. And so in my head, stories just started just going and going. The rain's falling down the tent, it's dark. And I thought, man, if I don't save some of these stories, they're going to be lost to, to my kids and to my grandkids and to their kid. I mean, this type of thing. And I thought, I'm going to create something where I can keep these stories. And so that kind of was the impetus of the whole thing. It wasn't so much really
not a hustle, not, yeah, yeah, not another, business idea, but
right. Yeah. So that's really what it was. I mean, that was like the start of it. I wanted to find a way that we could kind of save those memories, hold those memories, and save them for, somehow grab them.
Yeah. So that led to your idea of Firekeeper's Memories.
And it led to Firekeeper's Memories. Yep. And part of that, so, you know, for years and years, I mean, obviously for eons, folks have been telling the story around the fire, you know, and so stories have been told from ancestors on down around the fire. And obviously, 500, 600 years ago, years and years ago, they didn't have the newspapers, that type of thing. It was all told around stories. And so it was told around fires at night. Guys would come in at the night and they would tell the stories. And so that made me think of Firekeeper's Memories. And then it made me think that my dad and old Jack, they would be the guys at the fire. And so it made me think of them as Firekeeper's Memories. And so that's kind of what came up on the thought of this thing, is I want to try to save these the same way that save memories, family memories, and friend memories that normally would probably not be saved, and they'll be gone. They'll be gone for the rest of the family if we don't tell them, you know. And so there's so many stories, and when you talk to people, you find there's just a million stories that come up that people just, unless they're asked about it, or unless it just this is the perfect timing or something, they're lost. And I want to try to find a way to capture them. And so. So that's what we did. We worked, the whole family, you included, helped. Bear helped. Brittany's been fantastic with it. Bear's been fantastic. Mama helped. And so we've come up, we created a website, hired a web developer to help us with a website, hired him to help us create an app so we could use it on the phone, because we know that's the way things are nowadays. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get folks to be a part of that and save the stories of their folks. And kind of the cool part about it is that if they become members, and here's the sales spiel. The sales spiel is $35 a year to become a member. It helps with the cost of keeping that site up and going. It helps the cost of storage for memory and that type of thing. But once you are a member, you can add stories, and you can, the kind of cool thing about it is that you can comment on other people's stories. So if you got a group of family and friends, part of the fun of telling stories, and you'll hear it if you're sitting around our campfires, is that somebody will tell the story, and it's the same one we've heard 10 times in a row, but it gets embellished just a little bit, and it depends on who's sitting around, who's right. going to take the wrath on that story, right. You know. So anyway, it's kind of fun to be able to use that as a way to save those, and hopefully in 50, 60, 100 years or something, these stories that I don't have about my grandpa and my great-grandpa and that type of thing, if this works, we're going to have those type of stories for our grandkids and friends of our grandkids and that type of thing to look back and see. It'll be a chronicle of stories.
Well, because, and again, and the reason why I wanted to provide the background of how we grew up, it's not like we ever had much in the way of material things, but we were rich in family, we were rich in love, and we were rich in stories and experiences and just that connection, that human connection that comes with sitting around a fire and till 2 a.m. and talking about stories from long ago, but then talking, you know, that common theme of love and camaraderie that just comes from just kind of seeing that person's face across the fire from you and the flicker of the light and just the whole part of it is something that we wanted to capture that idea and create almost this virtual fire where people can sit around and they can share their stories and they can add to their stories and they can keep those stories for their next generation so that we're not losing out on this oral history, which is the tradition, the human tradition is this whole oral history. And the cool thing about the website and the app is that you can save your memories in a variety of ways. So it's not just writing. It's not just, if you're not a great writer, great. We got different options for you, right? So talk about the different options.
Well, you can save your, the kind of the, one of the cool ways we see that it kind of working now is you find an old picture. Find an old picture that might remind you about a story. And you can take a picture of that thing with these phones nowadays, this modern convenience that you guys have helped bring me into this only in the last few years with these phones. You can take a picture of it. You can talk into those phones. You can tell what's happening in that picture. You can go on the site and you could write about that picture. You could take a video and be talking over the video of a number of pictures. So, and you could also just plain out use audio. If you wanted to just use audio, you don't want your face on there, just use audio. But pull out a picture, tell about that picture. One of the cool pictures, we've got a picture of my your great-grandpa Hinton coming on a wagon train into some city in Arkansas. I'm not sure exactly what, back when he was a baby, back in, you know, 1909 or something like that. And it's weird. I mean, you know, somewhere
1917, that, I think it was, yeah.
Okay, somewhere in that range. And so anyway, it's kind of cool to put these things up and then to get other family members to say, yeah, I know that person, or to get some of the older people in the family. There's lots of pictures that we get, and you see, and who are those people, and what, you know, this type of thing. So it helps get that history. So the way that it works is you'd go on and you would put in a date. And that's kind of the cool part about it is and it doesn't have to be the exact date. You can put in a circa date. But if you think that picture's from the, you know, 1910 or something like that, you put in 1910. As it goes on the website, it gets put in chronologically for you. So you're
building your timeline.
Mm-hmm. You're building a timeline, and pretty soon you're going to have story after story after story, really from the time you were a baby, or from the time your great grandparents are babies, mm-hmm. and there'll be lots and lots of stories all the way through. And so people that are looking at that, you know, younger people maybe years from now are going to be able to look at that and really get a much fuller picture of what they're, yeah. what and who their yeah. family were.
I mean, it's kind of a combination of virtual scrapbook, but not only that, virtual scrapbook, virtual fire, where you're actually, because you can hear these stories as well, and it provides a sense of community too, because you write a story, and then this story included five different people, you tag those people in the story. Not only do they get to come and read the story, but then they get to add to the story. So I think a good example of adding to the story would be our last goose hunt trip, mm-hmm. right? So talk about that trip and how you put that on there and how that could be a good example of how people can kind of add to that story.
Well, so there was you went along, Brittany went along. We had Uncle Chuck and Uncle Chris and Aunt Sheila, a bunch of us that went along on this trip up up north that we've now been taking for the last few years to this place we go to with Matt, who's a guide up in that area, and has a 1,000-acre piece of property that he's more than a guide to us. He is a very great friend of ours at this point. But so we go up there and we spend some time up there. We try to go up there two or three times a year and be with him. Stay in his cabin and do some hunting out in his place. But you guys went. We had a great, great time there shooting geese and ducks. Stacy got her first goose ever up there, which was a heck of a
first duck.
And her first duck. Right. And part of the fun of those trips is being with, and not to get too emotional about it, because I can real easy on that trip, but just people that you love, you know, so much. I mean, family and friends that you grew up with. There's times in life when things are getting kind of tough or work's getting kind of tough and it just starts to become overwhelming, and then you can get away on these things. And it takes about a day or so to get your shit together because you're still in that work mode and you're still angry, whatever it is. But getting together with all these people, they've known you forever. They're not going to take that shit. So mm-hmm. it's just kind of cool. It's kind of cool they're going to bring you out of that pretty dang quick and get you back into feeling like you did when I used to run around with those guys when I was 12 in the woods. So mm-hmm. So it's those type of memories that are and to be able to bring my kids into that type of thing, extremely valuable.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to pull it back a little bit too. I mean, you guys have been incredibly blessed to continue to be a collective family unit, a very large collective family unit. And a lot of people, at least my generation, come from fragmented families, myself included. And I don't come from a large family. There aren't those sitting around the campfires having these long conversations and all of those memories. But certainly I do have memories of certain people within my life and within my childhood. You know, my mom and dad split when I was very young, and I would go visit my dad in upstate New York in a very small town. But my grandpa was very imperative in my upbringing, as was my great uncle, and I have all of these memories. And I think that part of, you know, this firekeeper's memories, one of the great things is that I could get on there and talk about these memories and then my relatives, whom I don't necessarily have constant contact with, can get on there and then they can add to their stories and maybe the conversations that we haven't had the ability to have just because of distance or any of those types of things we can have there. And then pass them down. I mean, I think that from a generational standpoint, at least I know a lot of women that I know and men too, don't have those memories of their grandparents because their parents didn't pass them down to them and they're no longer gone. And so for us to be able to capture the things that are close to our heart, I think is absolutely fantastic. But I don't think you have to be a collective family to be able to do that. And it's really imperative for anybody, you know, even the fragmented pieces, because it can start that conversation and connect you in ways that perhaps you haven't been for years. Just throwing that out there.
No, that's absolutely perfect. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I think that what happens is if you start thinking, it's kind of cool because it's happened to me, but if you start thinking about memories, it's not something you think about every day, but if you start thinking about memories, it is funny how they start just, one starts coming after another and another and another, and I haven't thought about that in 30 years, and I haven't thought, and I guess that's what I hope that folks will use this site for. I don't want anyone thinking, because it's yours, you don't have to share it if you don't want to, or you don't have to share it outside your family. You don't need to make it public, you can keep it private, whatever you want, but I think it's important to put those memories in because it's those type of things that tell, that create character. It create a character. You can look at pictures, you know, you can look at pictures and see things and people can tell about, but when you tell stories about that person, or maybe you have some video that you can put up about that person, or you can catch that video now, you learn so much more about their character than you do just from a flat picture. And so, I'm hoping folks will use it that way.
Yeah. Well, and I'm part of this leadership group, and one of the things we talked about in our last meeting was the danger of a single story, right? The idea that you see somebody out there and you think you know their story, it's just kind of this one-dimensional thing, you know, but everybody has a story if you just listen. And if you sit down and talk with that person, and there are all these memories that come out, there are all these threads that make up the fabric of who that person is, and it's so rich and so multidimensional. And I think that this is what that site offers as well. You know, just the connection between that, but all these different memories that make up who a person is can be preserved and saved and added to. And I mean, I think about my grandpa, who this is kind of named after. What I wouldn't give, you know, to hear him sitting around a fire telling me the same damn story he told me 30 times, but I'd love to hear it one more time. But if I had fire keepers back then, I would have recorded him. And I could have listened to it as long as I wanted to, and many times as I wanted to. Same thing with my grandma, my mom's mom, who my daughter's named after. I spent my life sitting around her kitchen table listening to her stories about Arkansas while she was cooking me vegetable beef stew in her kitchen. What I wouldn't give to hear that voice again, and this provides that opportunity. You know, not only can you put videos on there that are were created back then, but you can sit down with your grandpa and your grandma and mom and your dad, and through your phone that you carry around with you, you press the record button right there through the app, and there you go, and you record their story, and it's there forever, and then it's there for everybody to listen to, and it's there for people to add to. So the thing I love about it too is it provides that connection that I think we're kind of missing these days, just that simple connection between people. But it uses the technology of today to provide that connection again. So that's kind of what I think is kind of cool about.
I think you're absolutely right, mm-hmm. Stace. And I think, you know, one thing I would say, you guys, with your podcast, you guys, some of the coolest, you know, I've listened to everyone, mm-hmm. and some of the coolest ones are when you are talking to people, to me, about their backstory. That mm-hmm. stuff, that type of stuff is so damn interesting. It just is. It just always has been interesting to me, mm-hmm. What you know, trials and tribulations did folks have to go through to get where they're at? And there's still going to be more to come, but it's just interesting as hell for me to listen to that. And when you guys have those type of things, and that's what you're doing here, is you're spotlighting some folks, and it's interesting.
Very interesting. Well, Brenny boy, you are a you're a millennial. Mm-hmm. what does this site mean to you? Because you grew up, I mean, you're a digital native, as they call you. So what does this site mean to you? What does this Fire Keepers Memories movement mean to you?
One thing that's probably the most important to me about it is that I can see where I came from. Because, you know, it kind of molds you, your grandpa kind of molds you as a man growing up, and your dad does, and you don't get to see the stories, or you don't get to hear the stories anymore after your grandpa passes away. But now that stories that dad has been posting on Fire Keepers are there, I can look at and see those and see, you know, where I came from. I see pictures of all the uncle's old big bucks taken on the property when they were in the hunt club, and I see all that and where I came from. So it gives me a lot better understanding of my family. And you don't have to be around the fire anymore to hear those stories. You can be at home on the couch at 9 o'clock and hear those stories and comment on them. And, you know, you don't have to schedule a huge get together to be able to listen to everyone's stories. And those deeper stories don't come out in regular conversations. They don't even come out on Facebook. You know, you post a status update, but it's one quick message, and then it gets dropped to the bottom of the timeline. You don't see it, but with Fire Keepers, it's a deeper story, a deeper connection that people post, and you can see that whenever you want to now. So
I guess I just say one more thing. Getting close to the end here, but just want to say one more thing is that what I'm seeing, you know, we launched this thing back in about a month ago, and it's still an evolution. There's still evolution going along with it. One of the things that I know, though, is that it is tough in today's environment, and you ladies definitely are in that group, and you are of that age where you're coming where, you know, these memories are probably going to start to be more, the older you get, the more important I think they are. But part of the problem is that the world is moving at a breakneck speed right now. It just is. You just don't, I mean, I know you're racing in here, and you're racing here, and you get on, and you kind of maybe look at Facebook and catch up a little bit, but you just don't have time to do, you just don't. And I know, I'm the guy trying to do this, and I know how hard it is to try to make the time to, hey, stop and do it. But I think if, you know, if we could get into a habit of trying to do, even if you did one memory a week, it doesn't take that long. Find an old picture, think of an old memory, put it on, you know, as you're laying in bed, you can use the app to put it on, and you'd have 52 in a year. If you did it for a couple of years, you'd have 100. I mean, so don't let it become overwhelming. So one of the things that we are working on as a group right now is creating a list of questions that will kind of spark your memories, and kind of a checklist of questions that I think are unique, you know, universal to everyone. So we're putting that together. We're also going to be putting together a list of photos that we think are important. And I'll just, you know, so a picture maybe of your grandma's front door, a picture of your grandma's kitchen, you know, a picture of the shoes sitting by the porch, you know, as you're coming in. Those type of things are, you don't think, you see them every day, but if those folks are gone, they can be valued. So yeah. Anyway, we're trying to put those things together to give folks a guide, and don't let it become overwhelming. You know, get involved. If it's something you think is cool, get involved on the site, become a member, put in one at a time, and it'll take care of putting it up there for you. And over time, it'll start to fill in. And I think it's going to be real, real valuable for folks.
You know, you were just talking about breakneck speed and just how fast things are moving these days. And it made me think of my friends, honestly. You know, we talk about tribe a lot here, and I can't count how many times my close girlfriends and I have sat around and talked about different stuff. And one of us will be like, oh my gosh, I didn't remember that we did that. That's such an amazing memory. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be ages old, you know, years old types of memories. Like if they mean something to you, put them out there, because life is short and you never know what's going to happen. And just being able to preserve that sort of stuff, is absolutely amazing. So it doesn't have to be familial either. It can be your tribe, expands into an even larger audience, I think. So let's not forget about that
too. No, you are absolutely right, Angela. And again, the one thing I want to really impress here is don't think that the memory has to be some big blown out story. just throw a memory on there. Nobody has to see it but you.
Yeah.
Just throw it on there. I think that if a year from now you look back and say, that was a stupid memory, well, delete it then if you really don't want it. But right. Put it on there because I think if you think it's something, it's something.
Yeah. Well, and I think my sister does the best job of that right now. You know, she's a photographer. She's a documentary photographer by trade. But if you go on and look at her stuff, it's simple stuff. It's her little baby who's wearing a diaper with the hair all over the place and with markers all over her face because she's had a crazy day and she's a little tornado. And, you know, it's pictures of her that are just everyday things. But 10 years from now, you know, 5 years from now, even looking back at a day in the life of baby Alley Cat, you know,
it'll spark an emotion.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and I think that this tool, as you said, is valuable for our memories of today. You know, think about, you know, young families who are having these babies grow up. It happens in the blink of an eye. Just get on there at night, you know, maybe, okay, great. Go on Facebook and then, hop off of Facebook, go on Firekeeper's Memories, take one of the pictures that you took during the day, because I know I take at least 10 to 15 pictures every day of different things. Throw a picture on there. If you don't feel like typing something out, hit the record button, talk about that picture, what happened that day. There you go. There's your memory. And then that pops right into your timeline. It does it for you automatically. I mean, the ease of this program is the beauty of it. And it provides this virtual memory box that anyone who's had somebody pass away or anyone who knows the value of these personal memories is the fact that it's invaluable. You know,
so modern day storytelling.
It is.
It is. And I, again, the one thing that I found that was very important to me, you know, again, my dad passed away. He was a writer. And looking back through some of his writings, some of the stories that were most valuable to me was when he was talking about just something we were doing and his take on it. Talking about Stacy or talking about Renee, what just their take on it. When you can hear that coming back from, or you see that coming back from a parent or it's invaluable. So mm-hmm. It's going to be my job here in the next few years to try to put those type of stories about my kids up there that they can look back on that I think their kids and grandkids are going to think are just cool.
So. Yeah. Talk about, before we get off here, just the impact that this project has made already. Talk about the woman who contacted you, her husband.
Yes.
Share that a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's a sad, I mean, super, super sad story that she was a young lady. Had a couple, you know, young kids. Her husband was killed tragically in an accident. And so she heard about our site, wanted to become a member. She did. A lot of the stuff she wants to keep private, and I think that's fantastic.
Right.
But what she's trying to do is that she, in the same way that Bear has done, is she has created a profile, in effect, a membership and a profile for each one of her kids. So what Karen does, and just to digress a little bit, Karen writes a story, you know, Dear Gracie or Dear Tim. So she'll write periodically, we'll write a story, getting back to what we were talking about talking to kids. But in this case, this lady wanted to get as many memories of her husband for her kids as she could and get them on a timeline for them and then to follow that with, you know, them obviously going on here and out. But, and so she's been doing that. But that was a very that was a tough one for us to deal with, and me personally, I guess. And so one of the things that happened was that she had, you know, you can put on video, but video can't be real real long. I think we get 9 minutes or so. Brittany, is that
1 gigabyte?
At a time. I mean, you can put lots of them on. You just can't go more than about 9 minutes on a video before it's, just the way the system works.
Sure.
So, but in any case, she had some lady come in and do a kind of a professional interview with her, talk about her husband, that type of thing. Just absolutely heart-wrenching. But she needed it broke down. And Brenny has this ability to learn this stuff. Thank goodness, because the old man sure doesn't. But he was able to break this down into sections for her. We were able to give that to her so that she can upload it to her site.
Yeah.
And so she's very, very happy about that. So,
I mean, we have tech support 24/7. It's called Brenny Boy. thank goodness for our tech support. So, yeah, I mean, and the reason I brought that up is because this is a tool that's being utilized by lots of people now as a way to save their memory. So we invite our listeners to check it out as well. Where can they learn more information about how to be a member of Firekeepers?
You can certainly go to, you know, I think one of the cool things, go to our website. It is www.firekeepersmemories.com. It's all one word, firekeepersmemories.com. We also have an app that we were able to, and we've got it on both Android and
iPhone. Yeah, it's on the App Store. Just look up Firekeepers Memories. It's like a triangle logo, black background. Should be the first thing.
Yeah, and that's a free app that you can get on your phone. The one thing I would tell everyone right now is bear with us on the. Sometimes it takes a few seconds for the thing to come up. We're working with the programmer on that right now to make it come a little bit faster. But don't get frustrated. Give it a few seconds to come up. That's on the phone. When you go to the website, that's automatic. I mean, you're there. It is, the phone is a great tool because everybody's got it in their hands right now. At some point though, it's great to look at these things on the computer. It's a bigger screen, and I think it's a cooler place to look at them. But certainly, the phone is a great thing.
Yep. Any other advice or thoughts to folks out there who are thinking about doing? I the reason why I want to talk about this too is because. Tis the holiday season, right? I mean, if you are looking for meaningful gifts for members of your family and you don't want to get the same old thing, you don't want to go to the store and buy a piece of junk that they're not going to remember in a month anyways, why not give the gift of memory? So you can go out to firekeepersmemories.com and you can purchase memberships for members of your family, right? And the folks are doing that.
Yep.
So that would be a great way, a great Christmas present this year for your mom, your dad, your kids, your aunts, uncles, and I encourage you to do that. They also have a Facebook page as well, so search for Firekeepers Memories, and Brenny Boy and Bear put a lot of cool stuff out there as well. So good stuff. Ange, last thoughts?
You know, we usually end this with a quote from one of us, but as we talk about memories, I'm sort of thinking of my grandpa right now, whom I lost way too long ago, but who was imperative to my upbringing. And I got the opportunity to, like I said, he was in a really small town, didn't even have a stoplight. It's where I spent my summers in upstate New York, and I spent a lot of time with them. And I was blessed to be able to spend some time with him as an adult. And we would go down to the local tavern because he knew absolutely everybody. and I got to shoot some pool with him one night. We had a couple of drinks. And it was within walking distance of his house. And as we started to walk back, he said to me, and I won't forget it, and I say it often, and one of these days I might even get a tattoo of it to commemorate it. But instead of, like, keep it between the lines of, you know, on the road as you're driving, because we were walking, he said, keep it between the fences. Just remember to keep it between the fences. And it stays with me. It's one of the most, like, it's just a memory that makes me smile every time. So listeners, just make sure you keep it between the fences.
I love that. I love that. Before we close here, I do have just one last item as a kind of a housekeeping item, but as a plug for something. We've talked a lot about hunters, and we are all a part of a group called the Woodsman. And it's a Facebook group that is really a community of guys and gals who are out in the woods and grew up out in the woods, and they're hunters and they're fishermen, and it's just a pretty cool group. And I wanted to give them a plug because the origins of Firekeepers Memories really comes from those hunting memories. And it's been a place now where we can all go and kind of share our stories in real time. And the reason I want to mention it is because they're doing something pretty cool this time of year, and this episode is going to come out on December 12th and on December 14th, so 2 days after this episode comes out, the Woodsmen are actually doing a dry canned goods drive and a toy drop for folks in our area, for kids in our area. So if you are from the Southwest Michigan area or Northwest Indiana area, and you are interested in giving back to the kids in your community, the Woodsmen are hosting this drive, and we'd love for you to participate in it. So on December 14th from 5 to 10 p.m., it's a Friday night, at the Eagles Lodge in Niles, Michigan, and I'll put the details on our Facebook page too. You can drop off dry canned goods. You can drop off toys from kids anywhere from birth up to 16 years, I believe, gift cards, anything like that. If you grew up around Woodsmen, you know that they're a giving group, and they like to take care of their community, and they like to take care of families. And so this is just one example of how they're doing that, how we started with hunting as kind of this spiritual and communal activity. And the Woodsman is kind of like that too. So I just would encourage listeners, if you're in the area, to consider donating to this good cause, and just one simple way of giving back during the holidays. So anyways, it's been a great night. Got to hang out with my dad and my brother in the studio. And Brady Boy didn't get to drink any wine, but...
We got to meet him.
I'm the designated
driver. We got to meet him.
Designated driver, that's right. Got to meet him.
So, creating some memories.
That's right, that's right. So again, firekeepersmemories.com or search for them on the App Store.
Just let me say, yeah. I just want to say one last, yeah. I'll throw in one last thing. We are working on, as I say, a list of photos, a list of questions, mm-hmm. that type of thing. And if you do find that it's just too much, we are probably at some point going to come out with a situation where, you know, you holler at us and say, hey, can you come in, bring that punk kid of yours with you and get some pictures taken and that type of thing. And we kind of put this thing together for you. So anyway, coming down the road. From the Woodsman, shout out to Dave Kennedy and Rick Bedell and Mike Ellis, all those great Woodsmen out there. We'll be there.
Yep, absolutely. So thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it, and we hope that you enjoyed coming along, talking a little bit about Firekeeper's memories and the importance of collecting those memories in your life. So we will talk to you next week. See you later, hustlers.
Hustlin' and Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacy Carlin and Angie Crocker. All views and opinions expressed on the show are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacy and Angie on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. You can also send the show an email to letschat@HIHpod.com. Feel free to write into the show if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot. So be sure to reach out to us if you've got a question, comment, want to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all the ladies have today, so make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time for their newest episode. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.